We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe. And I'm Sue Bird. We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A touch more.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 192, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network and sponsored betonline.ag. It's Unmissable Opinions, brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, he's Frances Tomás, and I don't know about you, Frances, but football has taken the first step to coming back. I'm all in on the ESPN Michael Jordan documentary, and we also have a gigantic guest coming up on today's show. So to say that I'm a bit jazzed up for today's show might be an understatement.
Hola Dan, hola Gules. Yeah, we've been doing the podcast for 3 years and today I am hyped. I don't know if that's a word in English, but actually it's not a word in Spanish either. I could not be any more excited for the show today. Let's get started.
Right. So instead of talking about Barcelona being back in training, Samu Umtiti's injury and all of that stuff, we're not going to waste any more time. Let's get to that interview. Today on the show, we have the pleasure of being joined by a Champions League winner, a two-time Dutch Footballer of the Year, five-time Eredivisie winner, a World Cup semifinalist, and a La Liga champion with FC Barcelona. It's Ronald de Boer. Thank you so much for joining the show. I know it's unusual times, obviously, with everything going on in the world, but we do really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dan.
Well, first off, before we get to the FC Barcelona stuff, I do need to ask about the team that you're most associated with, the one that you're currently with, obviously, that being part of arguably the most famous group of players that Ajax ever produced, a young group that upset AC Milan 1-0 in that Champions League final in 1995, Patrick Kluivert becoming the youngest player ever to score in a Champions League final. I know you know all the stats. As young as that group was, where did all that self-belief come from?
Yeah, I think it grew in, then it grew gradually during the games that we played, the first the group stage, then the quarterfinal, semi, and in the final, we didn't really knew where we were standing at that point of time because it was totally new for everybody. Only Frank Rijkaard was the only one with a lot of experience, and Danny Blind a little bit, the father of Daley Blind. He had some experience, but not more than that in the Champions League. Or at that time, it was still called the Europa Cup one. And that year, they announced it to Champions League. So for us, it was a jump in deep water, basically. And we had no idea what we were facing and how good the opponents were. But of course, the first start against Milan, and they were the current champion. We beat them 2-0 with very good football. We deserved the win completely. And yeah, that was, of course, the beginning. But still then you think, okay, maybe they were underestimating us. They thought, oh, we're a champion and we can still do the job. Maybe not focused enough. But then I think, yeah, we showed also in the other games that we're not so bad. And every time we thought, oh, that's a great opponent. And then we played against that team. And then, yeah, they weren't so strong as we thought they were.
Well, Well, through Johan Cruyff and many others, the connection between Ajax and Barcelona still so strong. So as you work with the next generation of stars, as you're currently doing, do you still see the connections in what both clubs are trying to teach?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I think the philosophy is throughout the whole club. So it starts with the youngsters. I think that's the foundation, the pillars of your philosophy. You let boys play like you think they should play. And search for players that have like a DNA, in Barcelona DNA or an Ajax DNA. And I think if you see the players coming through, most of the time you can directly identify that's an Ajax player or that's a Barcelona player. And they're similar styles. So it's always the ball on your feet, with your brain, technical, playing as a team. I think all those things, aspects... I think you see back also now with him, because I'm very much involved in the youth academy in Ajax, and I see that still, is still throughout the club, and we have some great talents coming through, and you think, yeah, that's only happening at Ajax and in Barcelona.
Exactly. And there are many similarities as well in terms of what Ajax has always done and what Barca have traditionally done. It was more evident in our eyes when you were there. And the years after as well. How important is it, especially in these coronavirus times and financial times that we're going through, for a team to promote from within?
Exactly. I mean, that's the point that you're now making. I think is very important that it will affect a lot of clubs financially. So they're not so able, so easy to buy players. So you look then probably in your own backyard, what you have. But I think it should be always like that. You should always look. Because I think Ajax and Barcelona, the Cantera, La Masia, has always been so important for the club. If you see the last 10 years, the decade, the most or the best player come through the youth system. And I think you have to believe in that. The only thing different now with Ajax and Barcelona is that Ajax is still continue doing that. Of course, Ajax is also is healthy, and they sometimes change a little bit the philosophy to buy some exceptional players. But still, the youth get a lot of possibilities to show themselves. Barcelona is less. I understand also because the importance, what is on stake is bigger than the Ajax. Barcelona has to win the Champions League, has to be champion of Spain. So they're looking for, if there is a good player in the youth, they can directly implement in the team. If it's not available, we buy somebody else who can. It's a shame in one way, because I think you have to have, I say it strongly, the balls to do so, to have the belief that you... that the youngster that we train and where we work so many years with, they can do it. Because most of the time what happens that because they have the understanding of what it is, to we have the philosophy, they adapt very easily, the youngsters. Mm-hmm. It's not that they come in a totally different environment. No, they know how the Barcelona is playing all those years already, because they implement the same system at the younger age. So I think... What I think is also very important, that you saw it with my brother, you see it, you saw it with Luis Enrique, you saw it with Pep Guardiola, with Rijkaard. They've always been affected by the academy. Once my brother trained the under 12 and the under 19 for many years. Pep did the second team, Luis Enrique and the same. So they know what's going on there. They have a very close bond with the youth, and they see, I see some youngsters, I want to give them a chance. And then you see what happened with those youngsters. And I think that is a bit lacking now, what Barcelona is doing, giving the boys a chance. And they get other coaches who come from outside. And it's understandable. They have a view from players from outside, not really from inside. And that's basically what I think the board of Barcelona has to almost implement. I want every year 2-3 players giving a chance to make it the debut. I think that is important. But can you be that strong? Because I know what I said, there's so much at stake, of course, with Barcelona.
Of course, and it always comes from the very top as well. And as you are mentioning, it is all about whoever's leading the club, not necessarily just the coach, but from the very top. And obviously at Barca, we've got elections coming up soon. We'll most likely not be this season, will be next season, but it's all about what philosophy they've got. Now, obviously being from Ajax, from Amsterdam yourself, we've got someone from Holland playing currently in our team. That's Frankie, Frankie de Jong. Obviously a player that was extraordinary for Ajax, coming through, particularly last year, and he's playing for us this year. He's got, in our opinion, he's got all the makings of a fantastic player. But what else do you think he needs to do to blossom in the way that he did at Ajax, at Barcelona?
Well, let it put it this way. I think for a youngster to come in a team of Barcelona and play so many games his first year, I think that's exceptional. People still think, okay, he didn't touch the level what he did with Ajax the last few months that he played in the Champions League and what we saw with the Dutch team. But I think it's not for many given to play so many games at Barcelona. It was still an unbelievable strong team and be a regular. So I think he did okay. Because, for example, Matthijs de Ligt, who went to Juve, he had more trouble to start. And I thought, I was almost sure that De Ligt, Matthijs could adapt very easily, quickly, and be a regular. But it was the other way around. So I think he did very well his first season, although it was not ending, but he did okay. And I think now, again, the players understand his quality, the coach, of course. And I think sometimes I saw him almost left winger or right winger. That's, of course, not the spot. But he can still do it. He's a team player. And he will roll off his sleeve and work his butt off. So he's a great character. And I know for sure he will succeed. And hopefully he becomes a regular on his favorite spot because he's a distributor. He wants to give the passes. Mm-hmm. And you can't ask for Frankie de Jong to score 20 goals because he's not like that. Mm-hmm. He's never been that. He's like a guy who opens up, create an extra man on the midfield. And even when you're on the pressing, he can turn away and then you can play on. It's like a bit like Busquets always did. Mm-hmm. And he has to now, of course, two Busquets in the team is sometimes too much, in my opinion. And of course, they can play with each other, but it's similar type. So I think in a certain time, he will probably, because he's getting older, Busquets, he was my all-time favorite on that spot. Mm-hmm. And but I think if the time comes, I think he can be a great replacement for Busquets.
Mm-hmm. Well, thinking back to your time playing at the Camp Nou in Barcelona, when you were on the team, what are some of the memories that stand out? And obviously, we already mentioned that you did win a Liga.
Of course, the start. I mean, I scored with my debut against Benidorm, although it was Benidorm. But
I was there, Ronald.
Header, and a header from Figo, across from Figo, and I scored the 0-1. And that is always nice to start. And then the second game was El Clasico in Camp Nou. And we won 3-0. And it was, I think Frank and I were announced as player man of the match together that game, so it was nice. So it was a great start, and great memories at that time. I mean, if I look back to those almost 2 years, not everything was satisfaction, of course, because I think the moment that I really got my spot and I played every game, I got injured badly on my groin. That took me like almost 2.5-3 months to get fit again. And then, I lost basically all the nice matches, like the semi-final Champions League, semi-final of Copa, the final of the league. So that was a shame. And then, of course, Van Gaal got sacked. He stepped up because of with Nunez. And then, there was a new idea about the team, how we get the team organized, and that was a lot of Dutch guys had to get rid of, and one was me because I didn't feel the confidence of the coach, but that happens. But so personally, like I was not really happy because I think at the moment that I really showed who was Ronald de Boer at that time, and we did very well, And I was playing finally well. I got injured. So that, that always gives you bad taste in your mouth and still think, yeah, what if I was staying fit? But that happens. But those 2 years, I had a wonderful time at Barcelona.
Well, from someone who was in the stadium at the time and watched the whole of that season, I can say that not for 1 second without your commitment. And it was a pleasure to have you in our team. Yeah. I've got a question a little bit different. So basically, you played with fantastic players along your years. Yeah. You've mentioned several, Kluivert, Rivaldo, etc. In Barca at the moment, we've got Messi, who, you know, is a little bit good. I'm sure we will agree with that. What is the secret to play alongside these world-class superstars? Because I'm talking in terms of spacing, in terms of understanding each other's games. The clear example obviously being David Villa, who had to accommodate himself to allocate Messi. Because Messi basically does what he wants. In your eyes, what is the key? What is the secret to be successful alongside one of these world class superstars?
I think the key is, of course, that a coach has to find a puzzle that makes him comes in his strength. Messi comes in his strength, so he can do the thing that he's good in and that is so exceptional. So you have to get him always in that position where he can be excellent. So for me, that is the key of a good coach. And of course, you have to find a balance because you can't only, and that's happened now a little bit with Messi. You can't always give everything to him. Hey? Like with Neymar, for example. Then you have to also, as an opponent, have to figure out how we could stop Neymar. So it's always a balance. I think that is important that you find it. But you have to get him in his best possible way on the ball. I think that is what you have to do. And you have to accept that he have a little bit a side role in being creative, basically. Still, you have to be creative, don't get me wrong. But if you see Iniesta and Xavi, there were always also guys who were giving the ball. They don't score like 20 goals but they are giving the forwards the ball and they will do something excellent. And that is something you have to, as a coach, have to look for. For example, if my forwards score, and what happened many times in Barcelona with Messi and, and Suarez, and maybe Henry was there or Neymar or whatever, you can count already with your fingers, okay, they score both or those three or maybe those four because sometimes they have another player on the bench who can score goals. That's for sure 80 goals together. So you don't need midfielders, a few midfielders who can score goals but not too much because you're already so many guys who can score a goal. But if you're only Messi who scored like 20 or 30 goals and the other two maybe only five, then you have a problem. Exactly. Where the other goals come from. I think that balance is a bit lost now a little bit because you don't have midfielders who score. Not the front also are only Messi is still continue scoring, but you see you need also from the other side a little bit. And I think that is what a manager has to look for or a coach that balance. And but for me, Messi is the best I ever seen in my life, of course. I don't see Pele and Maradona too much. Of course, I see the highlights. But for me, Messi is far out number one. If you play for so many years on that level, then you're exceptional. And it's always... We can praise ourselves that we're lucky that we live in this area to witness this life.
Well, that is certainly music to our ears, Ronald. And, you know, we've gone this far, but you and your twin brother, Frank, were both pretty good players as well. So before I let you go, I have to ask about your brother, Frank. He's been a head coach now for about a decade. Do you think his philosophies and approaches have changed as he's taken on different challenges, either obviously starting out with Ajax as their manager, Inter Milan, Crystal Palace, and now I watch a lot of MLS and Atlanta United as well.
I think his philosophy about football, his idea is still about how we've been growing up with Ajax. So he wants to implement. But he's not crazy, of course. If you have Messi in the team and some other players, then it's easier to play a little sort of attacking football than you have lesser players with less quality. And I think so you have to find out what do I have in my hand. What can I do to make this team win games? But that's finally you want to do. And so he changed in that idea that you can't be only like blinded and are going to attack, and you don't have the quality in front. So he's of course more conservative and looking from where. What can I do with this team? Of course, his first attention is to entertain the public. Well, it's important that people want to come to the stadium and see some nice games, because that is football is all about, in my eyes. And that's what you want to do. But also, in the other hand, you have to in your back of your mind that it's all about also about winning. And winning gives confidence, and then people will also appreciate, and then you can build on to be more attractive. And I think that is what he's learned. And also what he learned is basically that at Ajax, everything is so well organized, and everybody knows what a coach does, especially on the pitch. But for example, with Crystal Palace, you're more a manager. That's why they call it in England a manager. You're more a manager than like a coach. And that you have to learn a little bit. My brother had to learn a little bit that they ask different things about you as a coach, as a manager. And I think that is your learning. And now enjoying his time in Atlanta, of course. And I think he had a great first season, so hopefully he can continue to do so. But I think he gets wiser every year and learning from his mistakes or learning from, next year I'm going to do this, or every half year you ever did go wrong and good. So I think he's not so stubborn enough to think he knows everything. So he's still young, although we're going to turn Friday 50 years old. So we're halfway, you could say so.
Well, a happiest birthday from us. And yes, we also want to thank you again. Not only happy birthday, but thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. I know we definitely learned a lot as well, Ronald.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE. Now back to the show. All right, Frances, that was some great stuff by Ronald DeBoer. I feel like we were picking his brain, going back in time. And the rest of this show, we're going to continue to go back in time, maybe talk about a little bit of the present. But before we talk about Lionel Messi, Michael Jordan, and get into our very, very fun and exciting GOAT conversation that we're going to get into, I want to go all the way back to the 1992 Dream Team. This has been featured in the Michael Jordan documentary that you and I have both been enjoying on ESPN. It was a few weeks ago now, but the 1992 Dream Team was a landmark moment for all of basketball history, and maybe you could say all of global sports history, with the NBA players returning to the Olympics, going to Barcelona, where the Olympics were held in 1992. I want to mention very quickly, before we talk about the Dream Team, that Pep Guardiola, as a player, as a young player, winds up winning a gold medal with the Spain U23s, if you will, at the Camp Nou. Pep Guardiola, a gold medalist, and that is not even what's spoken about when we talk about the Olympics happening in Barcelona in 1992. Also on that team, the gold medal winning squad, I should mention, Luis Enrique, Albert Ferrer, Abelardo, and Kiko, longtime Atletico Madrid player. So that was the undercard, if you will, going on at the Camp Nou, because all the action at the time, obviously, was surrounding what was happening with basketball. It wasn't just when the U.S. started things by blowing out Angola or the two victories over Croatia. It was just all-encompassing these stars, the greatest stars in the world. Michael Jordan as the, not even peak Air Jordan at the moment, but he was at the almost the height of his marketability as what we were seeing of what was happening in the world. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird at the end of his time. It was just so many stars descending on Barcelona. And it's so funny to me, Frances, because there was a young man, well, I guess you could say he was a kid at the time, who was living just outside Barcelona, who I would love to ask about what he was doing in 1992 as the Olympics were going on around him.
Well, I was probably chasing girls in the playground, which is what most Spanish boys do at that age. Yeah, no, I remember the city changing. I think 1992 was sort of the culmination of what Barcelona became. There was this slogan that was Barcelona posat guapa, which means Barcelona make yourself look pretty. And I would say 5-6 years before the Olympics actually started, there was the whole city was changing. There was new areas created, for example, the La Villa Olímpica and all of that area that still goes by that name to these days. And it was a revolution. There was a lot of investment coming from the central Spanish government. I probably want to say for the first time ever, really. Infrastructure changed. The airport was expanded. And there was a huge buzz around the city. I mean, having Johan Cruyff leading the first team at Barca obviously had ignited a lot of energy into the club and into the city in itself. Obviously, knowing that Michael Jordan, Magic, Bird, etc. were going to come to the Olympics was another influx of energy, and there was a huge buzz around the whole city, and everything was changing, and you know, we just knew that it was going to be a life-changing moment, not just for Barcelona or Catalonia or even Spain, but for the world. I think that we made ourselves proud. The opening ceremony was like nothing that had ever been seen before. And from a sporting perspective, there's a lot of great moments. I mean, the one that everyone's talking about, and obviously, especially these days with The Last Dance, and rightly so, is Michael Jordan's eruption. But I still remember Charles Barkley from that time. He was like the controversial figure that people, you know, they, especially during the time, he was like the baddie that people love to hate. And then obviously, as you mentioned, the gold medal from Guardiola and the rest of the Spanish team, Spain winning a gold medal at the Camp Nou. That, I don't think will ever happen again, to be honest, for any competition, let alone the Olympic Games. So, yeah, understandably, I think it was a very exciting time. Personally, I was around 11 or 12 years old at the time, and everything happened, and everything came, and then everything went. But I remember that summer, we were at the epicenter of the whole world. My local hometown actually had the shooting range, sort of all modeled up and inaugurated for the shooting trials to happen there. And that's the only, unfortunately, it's going to be a downer for everyone listening, but unfortunately, that's the only bit of the Olympics that I actually attended. That was the shooting in my home ground. And it was also on the first day of the Olympics, I remember. So there was a lot of anticipation right after the opening ceremony. Then I was watching the whole of the Olympics, pretty much in giant screens around the city. There was a huge sense of community. There was a huge sense of occasion, and it was just legendary. And I also want to say this before we go or we move on. I really attended the Paralympics in full, so I was going to the Paralympic Games every day. I think the fact that we got free tickets as a family through my brother playing football, and obviously a bit of myself as well, had an influence on that. But I remember the Paralympic Games much more vividly than the Olympics because I attended them all. But I really want to give a shout out to the Paralympic Games and everything they represent. And in 2012, I was in London for the 2012 Olympics. And the same thing applies. The Paralympics really, to me, I know the actual Olympics are sort of the epicenter of world sports, but the Paralympics to me are even more emotional.
Yeah, certainly a great event and great events. It's not just one event for the Paralympics. I completely agree with you, Frances, there. Yeah, and it was great to hear about all that. And you mentioned Charles Barkley. I remember one of my first memories of a commercial was Charles Barkley, I am not a role model, when he was playing the bad guy. And you're right, that 1992, from all the footage that we've seen, I mean, I've watched every game that the U.S. played from the 1992 Olympics, you know, being on NBA TV or ESPN Classics through the years, and them showing all of that footage. Charles Barkley was arguably the best player on the U.S. team. I mean, he was phenomenal at the Olympics, and even they they touched on it, but I remember watching almost that whole documentary on NBA TV about the scrimmage that the U.S. team had. The energy that existed just from such an event like that, having, you're talking about the great stars like Michael Jordan and that entire team, other than poor Christian Laettner, but he was a star at Duke. I mean, Duke-Kentucky was one of the most famous games that ever happened. But anyway, for the rest of this show, we are getting into Michael Jordan and Lionel Messi. And I think before we even start the segment, Frances, I want to just throw to you that I would say that we're both in agreement that Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time and Lionel Messi is the greatest soccer or football player of all time. Are you and I in agreement before we even start the segment?
We do agree, but I want to say that Kobe Bryant is my Jordan. I actually remember Kobe more than Jordan growing up. Obviously, I am a little bit younger than when Jordan started, which obviously was 1984. So for me, special mention to Kobe before we speak about Mike.
Yeah, and I have to say for myself, even as far as seeing them live, I mean, everybody who's been listening to this pod for more than a minute knows that Frances and I are both huge basketball heads as well. But my first memory was the 1995 NBA Finals with the Rockets and a very young, well, not even a very young, 3 years in the league, Shaquille O'Neal for the Magic was really my first basketball memory. So I remember the second three-peat, but I have no memory of the playing of the first one, unfortunately, the 91, 92, and 93 seasons for the Bulls. Again, I even remember hearing at a very young age that Michael Jordan was playing baseball. So, I mean, how about that? How about that for a memory? My first memories are Michael Jordan, the baseball player, which is an absurd thing to say because obviously he is a basketball player and he embodies basketball. So, and I understand your point about Kobe Bryant. And I've said I've been partial to Steve Nash. He was my favorite player because when I was playing in whatever it was in high school and all those things, that it was my guy was Steve Nash. He was a point guard. He was tiring to everyone. He, you know, felt like I had to scrap for every ball, and that was my guy. But when it comes to, again, the GOAT conversation, we watch Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, everything he was, he took from Michael Jordan, and that was his love of basketball and intensity about basketball and just being the best. And I think the way to start with this segment, Frances, I actually was going to do what I do, and I was going to go into the stats and go into the numbers and try to explain to you why Michael Jordan, with his highest scoring average in a season, and Lionel Messi with all the goals that he scored, greater than every other player for Barca, but also every other player in the world. I was going to give you stats upon stats, but these are guys that they don't actually need the stats because their advanced metrics and all those different things that are just so much greater than everybody around them, particularly for the time period that they are in. And the only way to even try to find other guys that compare in this conversation to who is the greatest of all time in those sports were guys that played in different eras, right? Because if you look at the eras in which they played, there was no question. All of their peers, everybody around them, I'm not even talking about Cristiano Ronaldo here, but everybody else around them admits they are the greatest player that is in the game right now as they were playing actively, but they are also probably the greatest player of all time. And by the age of 25, Messi was already doing things with the Ballon d'Or wins, and not even the Champions League, but individually, some of his highlight reels were more than players had for decades and decades of playing. For entire teams, entire clubs could come out with their highlight reels, and they don't match what Messi had done before the age of 25. And Jordan's almost the same way. By the time he wins that first three-peat, he's what, 30 years old at the time, or less than that, what, he's 28, 29 when he finishes that first three-peat. And yet people are already saying this guy is going to go down in history as maybe the greatest player of all time. And I think for those two, where we begin this conversation, I think, Frances, is just living these guys and knowing that you were in greatness before they hit it the age of 30, knowing that they were already in the Mount Rushmore for their sports and arguably the greatest player to play those sports by an early age, I think is indicative of why and where this conversation begins.
Yeah. Totally agreed. I think for me, the decisive factor, and of course, you know, the scoring, the assisting in terms of Messi, the rebounding, the steals, the defensive player of the year accolades that Jordan gathered throughout his career, they are relevant. But I think to me, the most relevant part is that they made their teams winning teams. And especially in Jordan's case, you can see that the year he wasn't there, the Bulls weren't that brilliant. The second he comes back, they become a contender again. And you know, I was watching the Last Dance the other day, and I kept thinking, Messi's going to have a documentary like this at some point. And people do not really quite understand how lucky they are to have witnessed either the majority or most of Messi's career. You know, we are living, and I know we're in the dying years now, I keep saying this, but I think in two seasons time, Messi's gone. Either retired or gone as in the dominant player that we remember now, especially playing up front. So I think that we need to count our lucky stars. This is a player that graduated from our La Masia. He spent 6-7 years forming himself. He was already an extraordinary youngster when he came from Argentina. But the thing is, there are many extraordinary youngsters at that age. And it's just the sacrifice, the eagerness for improvement, the willingness to always learn, listen to feedback. Obviously, he was surrounded by probably the best youth community and the youth system in any sports around the world, which was La Masia in the early 2000s and in the late 1990s as well. And all the stars aligned for Messi to be who he is today. Obviously, nothing has been given to him. It's all about sacrifice. It's all about hard work. But this guy is extraordinary. And in 2-3 years' time, this may not be happening anymore. You know, we may be watching a Barca that depends on maybe Frenkie de Jong being the leader, or maybe someone else that comes along. We don't really know the answer. And the thing is, when he's so close to someone's retirement, and, you know, in Lionel Messi's term, I didn't even want to mention this word, but, you know, we need to be realistic. When Messi retires, there's going to be a huge void behind, and we don't really know who's going to be the one selling the newspaper, selling the T-shirt, fronting the team. In NBA terms, who's a franchise player going to be? Absolutely no idea. But being so close to retirement and still being, without any shade of a doubt, without question, the reference for everything Barca is just remarkable. So we need to count our lucky stars and make sure that we enjoy every single minute of Messi being at our club.
Yeah, this is no disrespect to Kobe and Shaq and Tim Duncan and the guys that did fill the void when it came to winning championships after Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls for the second time before, spoiler for the rest of The Last Dance, by the way, he goes on to play for the Washington Wizards and retires for a third time.
Does he? Really?
He does, but there's no disrespect to Shaq and Kobe and again, Duncan and Parker and the guys who filled the void of winning championships. But until LeBron really almost comes into his own, and he gets blown out in the 2007 NBA Finals. But until LeBron truly comes into his own, and maybe it takes him doing the decision, maybe it takes him really taking that heel turn into being what was a league villain to, you know, joining up with the Miami Heat to win that title and to get over that mountain. Until LeBron did that, there was a vacuum of the guy in the league. It could have been a bunch of different guys, especially in the mid-2000s. Depending on the year, depending on who was winning the championship, you could have argued for a bunch of different guys, but there was no guy where the rest of the league looked and said, well, that's face of the league. That is the guy, right? And LeBron has obviously filled that void. He's number 23, and we can get into it where there's a younger generation that's going to say, you know, it's LeBron over Jordan. But I think a lot of that's been, not to say pushed to the background for a while, but I think it's just different in that with LeBron, especially in today's day and age, and strap in for this one, Frances, because I'm going to argue whether it's Jordan and LeBron, it's the same thing, I think, when it comes to football. We're kind of talking about Messi and Pele. And this is, again, no disrespect for Maradona or Cruyff or some of the other ones that come up. But Pele's scoring records, or at least the ones that he says that he scored for Santos and then later for the Cosmos, and particularly in the World Cup, Pele, just like Messi, just like Jordan, and LeBron gets knocked a little bit because of the 2011 NBA Finals where he lost to Dirk Nowitzki on a team that was less talented than that Heat team. But all of those teams and all those players, they're winners. I mean, Messi has lost against Liverpool, Roma recently, and obviously you can't win every season. They get blown out by Bayern Munich that back in 2013, sure. But, I mean, Messi's a winner. Like, he wins games. Messi against Real Madrid in El Clasico, first ever hat trick, 3-3 tie. And you already knew Messi's going to make the Santiago Bernabeu his home. And Jordan did the same thing. It didn't matter where he was playing on the road. The guy never took a game off. He was just a winner. He embodied the sport. He embodied basketball in the way that Messi embodies football. And that's, I think, another thing in Messi's hat, where, again, it's no disservice to Pele, because Pele won at the World Cup, surrounded by really talented players for Brazil. And sure, he won for Santos, and you can only win with the team that you have and the games that are in front of you. And then later in his career, kind of was shown off in the U.S., still doing some things, banging goals for the New York Cosmos. But I think where Messi takes the edge is just, to do it on the stages in which he continues to do it. I mean, the World Cup was different back then, and there's no disservice to Pelé again, but I mean, Messi has one hurdle that he's never been able to get over, right? I think he's already done his job. He's got three Champions Leagues to his name. He's done all, even though he didn't play in the 06, I understand that, but yeah, I think when you're just trying to compare guys, if you need somebody to win a game for you, you put the ball at the feet of Messi, one guy in all of football history. If you need to win a basketball game in all of history, you put the ball in the hand of Michael Jordan. I think that's, again, another part of the argument that these guys were just winners. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I just want to sort of throw a different shade into it. As great as they were, they're nothing without their teams. In the case of Jordan, obviously he had along the whole way, pretty much, especially in the Bulls, Scottie Pippen alongside. He knew exactly what to do and how to support, and he understood his role perfectly. But then there were great other players, especially Dennis Rodman, but then Tony Kukoc, and to a lesser extent, you had Paxson at the beginning, and then obviously Ron Harper at the end. I think with Messi, it's even more significant because Jordan pretty much came out of nowhere into a 1984 Bulls team that had nothing, into a city that, you know, with all due respect to Chicago as a city, but from a sporting perspective in basketball, they were nowhere to be seen. And he was the Bulls. He was the franchise. And to be honest, even to this day, you cannot throw that, you know, very angry logo of a Bull to anybody without them thinking Jordan first. Even with the color red, you just think of Jordan straight away. But with Messi, obviously, he comes to Barca. They have been a winning team before. Granted, not to the level that they then became, especially with Messi's influence, but with Guardiola sort of playing around and shifting all the puzzle pieces. But there were great players before Messi, such as, you know, Cruyff. You can say that you've had all sorts of other La Masia players around him as well. With Guardiola, Guillermo Amor sort of leading the way. Of course, Messi was exceptional, but what I'm trying to say is that the way for Messi was already paved by those who came before him. So what he has done is taking Barca to the next level and make them, well, the household name that we see today. I mean, I was walking around Doha in Qatar, which is obviously where I live, just 15, 20 minutes ago before recording, and these kids were in Barca tops around. Sure, they're wearing Messi now, but the thing is, they haven't always done that. They haven't always done that. They would have been wearing Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, etc. And Messi has brought Barca to the forefront of everyone's sports life and sports sort of love, to be honest. And my point is, they're not making this alone. They have great players around them, and they continue to grow based on the guidance that came from others. I think in Jordan's case, it's more unique because, you know, let's face it, he didn't get much support apart from buying the right pieces for him from his board. And you can say, if you want to throw that, between Phil Jackson and Guardiola, the sort of clarividence of the way forward was quite special, and that's how they got guided. But I think that neither one player does it alone, but especially Jordan in that respect edges Messi in the sense that he's more of an individualistic player that builds things from himself.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too with the Bulls, because they cover this, I think, all the way back in episode one or two, that one of Jordan's friends at the way back in their younger years, this is in the mid-80s, one of his friends was Charles Oakley, who went on to be, you know, playing for the Knicks and the Raptors, and he was a tough guy in the league. He was basically Jordan's enforcer in the early going, as every young player really takes their knocks, and Jordan took a lot of knocks in the 80s, of course, from the Pistons and the like. But when they shifted Oakley away for Cartwright to do what was best for the team, again, it was an individual thing. It didn't really rub Jordan necessarily the right way, but it was for the betterment of the team. And you look at the way that, again, we even view these guys from a commercial sense. And I'm thinking a lot about, if you come to this podcast to hear us trash Cristiano Ronaldo, well, if you've been listening long enough, you get it occasionally. You know, again, I think Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the top five best players ever. But when we think of him as a commercial success, there's maybe it's because he's played for Real Madrid, Manchester United, and Juventus, and Messi has just played for Barcelona. That probably has a lot to do with it, where just like in the modern NBA, you think of players more than you think of them associated with a team. In the way that when you think, even though he played for the Wizards, again, I don't care. I blacked out for that. I don't remember that. So Jordan is the Bulls, and Messi is FC Barcelona. And what's interesting about that is that for this documentary to show how much of a kind of a jerk that Jordan was, how much of a killer, how much he just wanted to win, how it was all about basketball above everything else. I think back to my youth and that Be Like Mike commercial that just was so enthralling. I mean, that's what every kid wanted to do. You wanted to be like Mike, of course. I mean, I had one pair of, I don't even think they were real Air Jordans, but they were something. They were a pair of basketball shoes that were supposed to
be. There was a guy jumping there somewhere then, was there? That's what your mom told you.
Maybe my dad put a sticker on it or something. But anyway, everybody wanted to be like Mike, of course, growing up. Sure. And it's funny because for Barcelona, when they got rid of Ronaldinho and Deco, to not even pave the way for Messi, just out of necessity, because their off-the-field stuff and the team after the 06 Champions League was kind of cratering, and Rijkaard had lost the dressing room. Ronaldinho and Deco, it was over. So Mark Ingla, at the time, Chiqui Bejerstein, and Ferran Soriano shifted even the commercial focus of FC Barcelona to be all about Messi. And this is a point I also want to bring up, too, about this GOAT conversation and the comparison between the two. They have totally different personalities, right? That Jordan is, again, he's a killer. That guy was trash talking and wanted to just mentally, emotionally, and physically dominate you in every way. And Messi might be the same on the field in a way, but clearly he isn't that. Messi doesn't like the spotlight. He wants to stay home. And Jordan is the same way. It's why he took almost 20 years to get this kind of footage out and get him to agree to do something like this. Because the way that they are viewed is completely through the sport that they play. There is so little, yes, Jordan, about the golfing and the gambling, and he played baseball. And there are a lot of different things going on with Michael than there is Messi. It's so incredible to me that the most famous player in the world is also one of the most simple professional athletes that we have ever seen. He is about his family. Everything on social media is completely curated in the way that he goes about his life. And it just seems that he is simple. He has more money than I think the state that I live in, but yet he is still a guy that seems relatable just because he just seems to be all about family. So the point I'm making here, Frances, is that they are so much larger than life because we commercially view them simply as the figure that represents the sport that they played. So Michael Jordan could be a jerk, but you still wanted to be like Mike because you wanted to be good at basketball. You wanted to be the best at basketball, so you wanted to be like Mike. And Messi, you want to be like Messi, not in a way that he has a family or whatever he does in his spare time, which doesn't seem like he has much, but you want to be like Messi because you want to be the best at football. You want to just look the best when you're playing it. And that's why these two guys just take on the essence of the sport that they played in a way that I don't think any other players ever did.
Yeah, of course. And I think that they're both reflective of the era they lived in. I mean, in the 1980s, 1990s, the world was not as politically correct as we are today. I think if Messi had behaved now the way that Jordan was behaving then, especially with like bits like the gambling, for example, the internet trolls and all of that they generate, they wouldn't have really agreed with that, and they would have tried to look for many more loopholes. Also, everyone's got a mobile phone these days, you know. So if Messi had gone gambling like Michael Jordan did in the middle of the finals, then that would have been on Twitter, not the next day, not the next morning, immediately. And the moment that a picture of anything or anyone is online, first, you cannot get it away. Second, someone's going to screenshot it. So even if you try to get it away, it's going to be impossible. And anything that any sportsman do now, and especially Messi because of his dimension, isn't it, is going to be everywhere. So I think that's very influential as well.
To that point, I just want to mention that so Messi, the story goes that he didn't go down to the field to accept that 2006 Champions League final medal. He didn't go down to celebrate with his teammates because he was so upset for not even making the match day squad. And if that happened in 2006, and Messi was kind of already the map, and you know Inter Milan and other teams were already swimming around and trying to get the teenage Messi to sign for them. But Messi not going down for that, he admits that was a mistake. But I think you're absolutely right that Messi, even today, to tell you how different it is from 2006 to 2020, if Ansu Fati were to do that, if he weren't named to a matchday squad and he was up in the stands and didn't and doesn't go down and celebrate with his team, Ansu Fati maybe becomes the headline, right? In a way that just Messi didn't. It kind of was forgiven. He apologized. and we moved on. But even Messi, it tells you that he was such a competitor that even as a teenager, he just could not fathom not having been a part of such a thing. So like, as much as, you know, Messi is a nice guy, just don't forget that this guy just, he has a competitive nature to him that cannot be forgotten.
Of course. And that goes back to the point you made earlier about the fact that he's more manufactured. You know, he's better at advice, really. Everyone knows the dimension he's got on the pitch. It's for everyone to see, but also beyond the pitch. I mean, Jordan has got his own brand of clothing. So does Messi. Jordan made the movie. Well, Messi's made the Cirque du Soleil that actually I went to watch in Doha last month. It was pretty good, actually. But he's got his own theater musical, which is just insane to think. And these people are just the best ever in their respective sports. In terms of Messi, he had Andres Iniesta, Victor Valdez, he had Puyol, he had Xavi to lean on. And they were educated through La Masia. They were educated and they lived by the La Masia values. And you can see it because even maybe Victor Valdez a little bit less, all right? But the other four, even after leaving Barca and retiring, and sort of going away into a second, even third stage of privacy in some cases, they continue to live the same way. You know, I would much rather my daughters, if I had a son, it would be the same, but obviously I don't. So I would like my daughters to be a little bit like Andres Iniesta, a little bit like Messi, a little bit like Xavi when they grow up, because they've got the values that made me fall in love with Barca in the first place. But I think that over the years, and you know, I'm nearly 40 now, but over the years, I think Barca has become purer and purer and closer to what a great example of sportsmanship and values and solidarity is in my eyes. And we'll be really proud of them being that. And, you know, I don't want to finish the podcast on a downer at all, but we need to go back to those values because the last 3-4 years, probably more than that now, haven't been great. But this is exactly what the club represents. And I think that's Messi's, that's why he's the way he is.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder, yeah, and I think that is unfortunate to think, yeah, not to end on a downer, but that the shadow that Messi will cast when he leaves, you hope that the likes of Frankie de Jong, they step up with a voice that, and Andres Iniesta, that is the greatest testament to him. Now, Xavi is a little more outspoken. Puyol would give press conferences, sure, but the way in which Andres Iniesta, just by being who he was, you could see in his body language that if somebody had told me some awful story about Andres Iniesta and some reaction to a fan or something, there's no way you would believe it, right? I mean, there are guys that you see and you go, okay, like if, and not to attack Diego Costa, but if you tell me that Diego Costa had pushed an old woman while crossing the street, I go, well, I mean, that's it seems like hyperbole, but also possible if he was in a hurry. But
it would have been three women. Whatever you get told about Diego Costa is probably going to be less than what it actually was.
Right. And so, but if you tell me that Andres Iniesta had pushed a woman while going, while running, an older woman while running across the street, I would say, well, maybe he had a good reason. Maybe he was saving a cat from a tree or two children from a burning building. And you just think of that because of the character that they have. But yeah, the final point that I also want to make here about, I was speaking about Pelé, and I think, again, he is so much part of this argument that, not that, it's funny, because from decade to decade, and we've already seen it, how much basketball changes, right? So a Steph Curry, if Steph Curry had not played in the decade that he played in, he isn't Steph Curry, because he's not allowed to shoot threes, or his ankles are never fixed, because the science that helped him rebuild his ankles the way they did just didn't exist in the 80s, you know, it doesn't happen. So players obviously are greatly products of the time that they're in, but I think guys like Jordan, Messi, and even Pelé and LeBron, when you talk about the greatest to have ever played these games, they would have, I think, done it in every single generation that they lived in, because of course luck matters and a lot has to go right. That if Jordan isn't drafted by the Bulls and he doesn't wind up getting the confidence at North Carolina by hitting that shot in the national championship game and all these different things, if he doesn't get cut by his high school team to come back even stronger and grow from 5'10 to 6'6 almost overnight, if Messi doesn't go to Barcelona and get those treatments, the growth hormone treatments in the way that he did, you know, all these things have to happen for these guys to become who they are. And it is a domino effect, and I understand that. But I still think with the talent that these guys had, their willingness to work harder than everybody else off the field and to be fully focused on their craft, These guys would have been great in any decade. And again, that goes for Pele, who also played on a really talented Santos team. I want to throw that in there as well, that he had very talented teammates on Brazil and Santos. So it's not like Messi had Xavi and Iniesta, but Pele was alone on an island. That wasn't the case at all. So I think, again, we started that conversation saying that Jordan and Messi were our greatest of all time in those respective sports. And I hope that we gave some compelling arguments as to why they were, as to why they embody the sports that they played. And I hope that we did a good job to argue that. Well, Frances, I think when it comes to co-hosts, though, for the Barcelona podcast, I have to say that you are my GOAT, and I want to leave that on a positive note.
I thought I was Pippen, man. I like Scottie Pippen. I'll take that. How about that?
As long as you don't go Dennis Rodman on me, I think we're in good shape to see everybody next week for another edition of the Barcelona Podcast. So much thanks to Ronald De Boer again for joining us on the show. And thanks to you, the listeners, for tuning in again. You can tap in your app, check out the show notes to subscribe, find us on social media, Twitter, at the Barcelona Pod, or at HiltonD13 for me. We're on Instagram, being a little more active there, at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group is tbpod.link/group. Deeper dive discussions, you want to know all that. And the Patreon, we are not making quick take match reviews at the moment. We will when matches come back. But again, you can support the show financially, tbpod.link/Patreon. And we are on YouTube, where I have fun content coming out every week. And I do mean fun content. Even last week, which maybe it wasn't my best, but it was all about how Andres Iniesta almost went to Rangers in Scotland, as Ronald De Boer did, to be a teammate with him. So if you want to know about that, go check out last week's episode. I also have, you can check out the history of the entire club from the start of Juan Gamper back in 1899, all the way till now. I've got topics that are going through the decades and different pieces of history that I hope that don't get forgotten. So check us out there. Hit that subscription button. And thanks again for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça.
Forza.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.